Welcome to the Bounce podcast series, hosted by me, Dr. Catherine Munn. This series is inspired by the original Bounce project at University of Victoria, created by Rebecca Gagan. In our series, McMaster faculty and alumni share stories which could easily have remained untold or secret. These are stories of loss, grief, rejection, relationship difficulties, mental health problems, and more, based on experiences our guests have had when they were students. This podcast series has been developed by our Bounce team, made up of students, staff, and faculty at McMaster, with a grant from the McMaster Okanagan Special Project Fund. The Bounce team are inspired and informed by our own experiences as students and conversations we have had with students, and we are passionate about promoting more open discussion of failure and struggle at McMaster. We envision that Bounce at McMaster can help us to build resilience, individually and collectively, by increasing mutual understanding and creating connections through the sharing of stories. Learn more about the project, our team, and our guests by checking out our website. Hello, and welcome to Bounce at McMaster. Today, I'm speaking to Dr. Natasha Menezes, and I'm so pleased to have you join us, Natasha, as we talk with faculty and alumni at McMaster about experiences they've had during their years as students, challenges and hardships and times that they've been through that they're willing to kind of share with us to sort of bring us together as a community. So welcome to Bounce.
I'm very happy to be here. Thank you for inviting me.
Great. So I was hoping, because I know you'll do a better job at it than I would, if you can sort of perhaps just introduce yourself to the folks listening to us, sort of to tell them where you work and what you do right now, and then we'll talk a little bit more about, you know, how you got here in terms of your academic journey. So where do you work and what do you do right now?
Sure, Catherine. I'm happy to talk about that. So I am partly a clinician and partly an academic. In my clinical life, I work as a psychiatrist with a niche interest in early intervention for psychosis. So my clinical area focuses on transition age youth, so pretty much young people from the ages of 16 to 30 who are in a potentially early stage of an evolving severe mental illness such as bipolar disorder or schizophrenia. Any patient who comes into our clinic and receives care from myself or my team members would be somebody who's had psychosis. So that is my clinical area of work. And then the other part of the time, I do a whole assortment of things, but probably my two biggest identities are as the chair of student affairs in the undergraduate medical education program, so in our MD program. And I also work as a consultant psychiatrist for the Consent and Capacity Board, which is a legislative entity, part of our Mental Health and Healthcare Consent Act.
So it's obvious, Natasha, that you've spent a lot of time helping others with their mental health and continue to do so as a psychiatrist and as someone who helps students and others in their journeys. I think what we're hoping to talk about is sort of more of our personal journeys and challenges and hardships folks have faced as they were students, kind of getting to where they find themselves today. So I'm wondering if you could sort of tell us a little bit about your, just the educational journey you've been on, sort of starting after high school to take you to where you are today, just as a place to start, and then maybe we can talk a little bit about some of the things that you experienced along the way.
Sure. It's incredible. Somebody asked me yesterday, how long have you lived in Ontario? And I said, 18 years. And that struck me as a really long time because it makes me recognize how long my life has now been already. So I am actually originally a Quebecer. I did most of my education in Quebec and did my undergraduate degree and medical degree at McGill University. So those were the early parts of my years. I then did postgraduate psychiatry residency training also at McGill University, but thought it would be interesting to try a different environment, having grown up in Montreal all of my life. And so moved to Toronto as an adult, which is always an interesting experience when you've lived in one place and then you move somewhere as an adult because you realize how you have to set down new roots and you lose all of those longitudinal relationships that you've had. So I moved to Toronto as a specialty fellow, a postgraduate specialty fellow, and did a degree in clinical epidemiology. At that time, worked at CAMH for about 6 years, and then have now been working at McMaster University for about 15.
Okay, wow. So you've had lots of experiences as a student, and then also sort of in the sort of partway between a student and employee, and then also faculty. I wonder whether we might start sort of talking about maybe some of the experiences you might have had in medical school, because I know we'd spoken about, you know, I know medical school, having gone through it myself, but also it can be a challenging time. It can be a stressful time. And I wonder whether there are some experiences or circumstances that occurred for you during that particular chapter that you might want to speak to today.
Sure. Medical school was an incredible time for me. It felt as if it was a culmination of lots and lots of hopes and dreams, everything I had been working for and towards for a very long time. Probably one of the most enlightening experiences was coming into medical school and being with people who had worked just as hard as I had all of that time. And then realizing, wait a minute, I might not quite be as smart as I thought I was. So that started off my academic journey in medical school, was just trying to have a really honest conversation with myself about what were my strengths that I was able to bank on in terms of getting there to medical school, but then also what were my challenges going to be in terms of being able to continue my medical education and be the most successful that I could be. Environment also became really important. I had grown up in one part of Montreal, and this was the first time that I moved to downtown Montreal, which exposes you to a whole other environment, and then moving into a working environment and clerkship is a whole other developmental experience, and certainly one that I think no matter how much people tell you, you're never quite prepared for the long hours, for moving from a learning and independently based educational model to very much being a worker in a system and being a cog in a system in a way. And part of that system being patients who are basically not at their best because they're suffering and looking for needs to be fulfilled themselves. So in that social fabric, I really came to appreciate some of the nuances of living in Quebec and being a visible minority and being trying to be the best worker that you can be, and how sometimes there are some uphill battles that you need to contend with, which I think I might have been a little bit sheltered from until I was put into that clerkship working environment.
Mm-hmm. And so I think there's so many things that you mentioned there that I think we could spend a lot of time digging into and talking about. I know, I guess I do just want to reflect, you know, you're talking about coming into medicine and then sort of meeting, I think for many can probably relate to coming into some part of school and realizing there's all sorts of other super smart and accomplished people there too, who have worked hard and are very bright, and just feeling that having that feeling of wow, will I be able to keep up, and what are my strengths and what will be my challenges as I try to get through this part of my education. I feel like that's something that so many people can relate to, and I think especially when you get into kind of postgraduate in medicine and graduate schools, even more of that sense of just how sort of in a sense competitive it is, but also how, you know, just that there's the positive aspect of that, I think, that you were referring to too, of being around other people who are really motivated and excited to learn, but also the kind of challenge of that. I don't know if you can speak more to that kind of feeling that you had.
Certainly. There's such a self-learning process in that developmental stage. I think no matter what you're doing, whether you're in medicine or you're in some other graduate or undergraduate degree, it's just part of being a normal young adult, is discovering yourself and discovering what are the tools that you can rely on and what are the abilities you have to be able to pull upon. So part of my own challenge, I think, was trying to navigate where I fit into that system, but also just discovering a lot about myself. So for example, discovering that probably I don't do great with sleep deprivation. I always thought I wasn't a big sleeper, and in fact, I'm not a big sleeper. But now in retrospect, when I think back to those many times where I must have been unraveling, but somehow had no presence of mind whatsoever to be able to reflect on what's happening here. Why does my boyfriend at the time have to pick me up and drive me home 45 minutes or an hour away to my parents and drop me off and leave me for the weekend where I can be nurtured and taken care of and fed, and then drive me sobbing back to my apartment Sunday night? I don't even know how I managed to keep on going without really asking myself what was going on, as opposed to now in my psychiatry mind. I think, wow, I really didn't ask myself a lot of questions. I just kind of assumed I was sleep deprived and stressed and maybe not at my best, but didn't really take a solution focused approach in any way. And if I had to do over, I certainly wouldn't plod through in this kind of automatic robotic mode. I'm hopeful that I would have pressed pause, or somebody would have pressed pause and said, hey, you know, you're not really supposed to have a meltdown once a month and have to go home to your parents all the time. Like, you're supposed to be able to plod through. And if you're not plodding through, well, I was plodding through, obviously, but you're supposed to be able to maybe prevent some of that or anticipate what are the triggers for it. And take a little bit of a moment to get to know yourself, which I didn't. I just pushed through automatically, and, you know, I would hit a wall, and my coping, I guess, was to go home and come back and carry on, which I recognize was not the best health promoting behavior I could have engaged in.
Yeah. I mean, I think what you're sort of pointing out is that idea that I guess we all kind of try to, we learn perhaps hopefully at some point how to reflect on ourselves and how we're kind of managing and coping and reacting emotionally in a kind of situation. But we don't necessarily, that doesn't necessarily come naturally. It doesn't necessarily, you know, we don't necessarily know how to do that or have been maybe taught how to do that in our lives. And so sometimes we just have to learn, like we have to figure that out the hard way by hitting various walls and then trying to figure out, well, how do I dig myself out of this feeling, or why do I keep finding myself back in this place? I mean, it sounds to me like that's what you're kind of describing there.
Yeah, I think it's giving it the space in a way to take a step back and press pause and say, what is this? And is there something that I need to do to prevent it, as opposed to pushing through it and assuming it's just going to get better on its own, which, you know, it always used to eventually, thankfully. But I don't know that was kind of the best student life that I was living at the time. And when I compare our awareness that we have now about stress and distress and mental health, I wish I had a better awareness. I wish that I had more psychological awareness and mindedness to be able to take that ability and sort of press pause and say, wait, this isn't really normal. And that was me even in, you know, moving into residency. So I already was gearing towards psychiatry. I'm assuming I was a little bit more psychologically minded than some people might have been. And even then, it was a challenge. So it's been an interesting experience for me to look backwards and say, well, you know, it happens to the best of us, truly. And I think we get geared up as young people to do what we think we need to do. And that's not always the healthiest choices for our well-being.
Yeah, and I do think, you know, I just am struck by, you know, you use the word normal, that's not necessarily normal. I guess the question sometimes is, well, you know, what is normal? And sometimes our student lives, I guess, medical school, all these experiences push us into feeling places that don't feel right, that feel like we're being pushed to our very limits, and how we react may or may not be sort of in quote normal, you know, but. It is what we felt and did, and what we, you know, the only way we knew to cope at the time. It sounds like this was the only way you knew to cope at the time. And since then, you've kind of learned other ways of dealing with those kinds of situations, including knowing that when you really should sleep, you really should sleep, and you need to respect your sleep and respect your body and yourself in order to allow yourself to do that. I don't know if
I mean, I think there was so much about those circumstances in that time that were not normal in a way. So it's funny that you're pointing out that I use the word normal. I can't even think of how I use it. Well, but I do fully recognize how much was unusual about my training. I think of all of the circumstances where I was witness to my supervisors behaving in a way that didn't sit well with me, or I was put in positions that felt uncomfortable, painfully uncomfortable for me, or, you know, when I did neonatology, I was basically in-house on call every second night and was not a good sleeper. So was easily going for days at a time with barely any sleep. I was always either on call or post call. Mm-hmm. I don't think there's anything normal about that. So if in some way I became desensitized to what's acceptable or not, what's health promoting or not, it kind of made sense to me at the time. And it actually still makes sense to me now, because I think there was so much that was unusual. So many times when I would have to bite my tongue or recheck my value system, or, you know, suppress some urge to, you know, advocate for a patient or to assert myself, or where I didn't suppress the urge and then had to deal with the consequence from it. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think we were constantly trying to adapt and survive in a system that just kind of taxed you to the max.
Yes. And I think that's what I'm hearing is that, you know, in fact, the circumstances you found yourself in arguably weren't normal. Like, they were very high pressure, very kind of, in some senses, from what you're describing, unhealthy, kind of unsupportive environments. So how we react in those kind of environments is obviously like, is it the system that's pushing us in this direction to these reactions, or is it our problem? Is it a system problem, or is it both? So yeah, I think it's interesting the way, you know, to think about. It sounds to me from what you're saying is that there were lots of circumstances that, you know, you were pushed in or placed into by virtue of training that were uncomfortable, and there were good reasons and emotional, but there were good reasons for them being so, and good reasons for you to react in a way to those situations.
Mm-hmm.
I wonder, I think so.
Yeah.
Are there any situations in particular you sort of think back to and think, wow, that was a really, really tough situation that I kind of really had a big impact on me at the time?
Yeah, there was one in particular that stands out to me just because I know what a visceral response it still brings me now when I think about it, but also because of the timing of it. I was in my last clinical rotation. I had just matched to my first choice specialty and my first choice program, and had found about it while I was in that rotation. And on a day where my supervisor was away, I was put with one of the non-physician team members on that team. And because I didn't normally work with her, I sort of shadowed her in a sense. I didn't do much proactively. And for whatever reason, after a particular patient encounter that I sat in as an observer, that team member made some assumptions about what I should know about the patient. She made an assumption, first of all, that we had a similar ethnic background. With the patient and I did not have a similar ethnic background. I mean, we were both Southeast Asian, but, you know, she was Bangladeshi and I wasn't. So, and so the team member was asking me a lot of questions. And when I put forward that I didn't really know, and that, you know, I had a different background than she did, and that perhaps some of the questions the team member was asking about were pertinent to that patient's culture, but not necessarily to mine. Something about that interaction just rubbed the team member the wrong way. And or perhaps I had rubbed her the wrong way at another time, who knows. But really, very unexpectedly, the team member absolutely exploded into a diatribe of accusations about my being all sorts of undesirable things, including being racist and misogynistic. And it was just so shocking to me. And then she finished off by making a very emphatic statement about how I was the most unempathic student that she had ever supervised, and that she had been supervising for 30 years, and that she couldn't believe that the psychiatry program hadn't seen through me, and that they had accepted me into their program, and that they would be in for a rude awakening. And it was just so outlandish, but so incredibly hurtful. And I had no ability whatsoever to even understand what had triggered it. or what my contribution to it may have been, or what the meaning of it even really was. I remember promptly leaving that day. It was a Thursday, and basically going home and crying until Sunday night, called in sick the next day and, you know, cried straight through until Sunday, just so devastated. I'd never been spoken to. I've been spoken to nasty enough in my life, but I've never been spoken to in such a targeted and personalized and vilified way. And really, for some reason, had no ability to talk myself through that, no ability to say, maybe it's not me, maybe it's her, or to do anything other than just sort of feel like I was ashamed and questioning whether she was right, until a really good friend of mine from med school sort of knocked on my door and said, hey, you haven't been answering the phone and I haven't seen you all weekend. We were supposed to get together. And so he was the first person that I told that this happened. He had just matched to emergency medicine and was, you know, a lot more matter of fact about things than I tended to be, and knew me really well. And basically looked at me sobbing as I told him all of this. And he said, goodness, Tash, that's ridiculous. She must have just been having more than a bad day, and she must be a horrible person. Did you say that you've been in bed with this all for 4 days? How is it even possible that you gave her even an ounce of your time and an ounce of your energy? Do you think that there's some truth in what she said? Mm-hmm. There's no truth in what she said. And then he, you know, he took me out to dinner and sort of cleaned me up, and off I went. And we came up with a plan that I was going to speak to my supervisor on the Monday. But I remember being shocked that that was the first time that I allowed that maybe it wasn't about me, it was about someone else, and that actually what she had done was completely unacceptable. But I somehow had not had the presence of mind to do that until someone else had to do that for me. And that was really striking. But he did it really well, that I felt quite empowered to go to my supervisor the next day and to say, look, you know, this happened, I'm very perplexed. I've thought about it. I really can't think of what I said that would have deserved any of that or even provoked any of that. And very much to my disappointment, my supervisor looked genuinely perplexed and said, yeah, that must have been really hard, but didn't validate anything more than that. Mm-hmm. And when I said to him, well, but now what happens? He said, well, you only have another week in your rotation. Keep your nose down to the ground and do your stuff and try and avoid her if you can. But didn't give any indication that he was going to speak to her or that he would bring myself and her together, which I think would have been really important process steps for me to be able to move forward. And I don't think I ever did move forward. He never took the stand that I probably needed him to do, which my friend had done. He never said, that's unacceptable. I've worked for you for 3 weeks. That makes no sense. I'm going to go and speak to her and try to understand. I'll come back to you. He didn't take any of those steps. And, you know, now I've been a supervisor and an educational leader for 20 years. And I absolutely know that I would have managed it differently myself. And that helping a student in that situation to move forward in the healthiest of ways, even if there is some reflection to be done, being able to do that, being able to turn it into a learning experience, but in a constructive way, is absolutely key. And I didn't feel that he took that responsibility on. And I think that that was part of the damage that was done to me. And so it's interesting and ironic. I've had a wonderful and ongoing clinical career, and I've, you know, been recognized for the clinical care that I provide. And even in that, there are times when I get this little bird that flips through and says, you are empathic. If she could only see how you treat your patients, as if I have anything to prove. But those instances that do come, they show me what an impact her vitriolic words had on me. Even though now, you know, with presence of mind, I have thought about it. I don't think there was anything there other than her own issues. I really don't think there was anything about me. I had no interaction with the patient that day. So yeah, it's been an interesting experience.
Yes, and I thank you so much for sharing that experience, because I do think many can probably relate to having received critical feedback at some time in their lives, but I think this is obviously more than critical feedback. This is sort of, you know, moving into kind of being sort of verbally abusive feedback that you received from her. And and totally inappropriate accusations that she made about you. But it really,
she also made racist comments about me per se, not only accused me of being racist. So there was a lot that was completely inappropriate. And so it was a really good lesson a really hard lesson, but sort of a good lesson, which is how do I manage myself to carry myself through these experiences.
So that's what I want to ask you a bit about in terms of, you know, you said you really felt at the time you really had very little ability to kind of, or it was such a hard thing to deal with, even though maybe there was part of your brain that recognized even early that this is, as you said, outlandish, this is outrageous, this can't be true because I don't understand this in any way. Yet at that time, not being able to kind of find that kind of, that response in yourself or to kind of challenge what she was telling you was true about yourself. But it sounds like now, you know, you feel like you would recognize, you know, if somebody treated you that way, how you would react and how you would perhaps understand that and place that encounter and place her and yourself to understand, you know, that this wasn't all about you. This was a lot to do with her and how she was behaving and feeling that day. But I guess, you know, thinking back then, I'm wondering what has helped you over time kind of figure that out. So to know that, you know, when you receive that kind of, hopefully you've never received that level of critical feedback or it can't even really be called feedback, but subject to that kind of verbal abuse again. But how do you think you've evolved in terms of your ability to react now, or how would you react now different to perhaps how you reacted then?
I've thought about that a lot. I've grown in confidence. There's no question about that. But I've also grown in skill. One of the privileges of being a psychiatrist is the wonderful emphasis on communication and on reading situations and anticipating challenging interactions and then being able to manage them. So I have a skill set that became intrinsic to my training. And then, in a bit unfortunately, I've had ample opportunity to be able to practice that skill set over the course of my career. So, and to do so in an environment with a team that's incredibly supportive and nurturing and validating, and that serves as a mirror for how I want to see myself. Although I had an interesting interaction a few years ago that felt just as traumatizing as that one did as a student. It really evoked all of that vulnerability that I had experienced that time as a student. And in this particular one, there were very similar circumstances. This one was with a patient's mother. The mother was also of a similar cultural origin to myself. The mother, in her rage, completely caught me off guard. Again, there was nothing. In fact, I had just started a conversation with this mom. My assessment was with her son. It had gone very, very well. I didn't have any difficulties with it at all. I was with several team members. And the mom, but there was something about our commonality of our culture that the mom took exception to. She wasn't happy that I didn't speak her language. And so that somehow turned into something with her. And she, not unlike what happened to me as a medical student, somehow lambasted me for many things that sort of didn't make sense in the time. And I remember feeling so paralyzed, which I haven't done. There have been so many times when I've had to stand up for my team members. I've had to bring harassment on the part of patients and families to an end. I know I have that ability. I'm very comfortable with it. I manage it. The team looks to me to be able to do that. I didn't do it this one time. And I've often asked myself, why did this go on for 40 minutes? And how did I just let that woman do that to me, just like I did 25 years ago? Mm-hmm. And I realized that the element of surprise is a very big one. So, and because I tend to not, I try to not be reactive to it. I was trying, if you can't understand the situation, you can't come up with a strategy to get out of the situation in a way. And that ended up being my handicap in both of those situations. But I think also in both of those situations, my environment didn't support me. So on that particular day, I was with particularly junior team members, which would never have happened before. And they were both just as flummoxed. As I was, and I don't think that they felt that they were in a position to stand up for me, whereas other team members I had worked with for more than a decade, we always had tag teamed. We, you know, when one is receiving words from somebody, then the other will always stand up. It's just always been the culture that we work in my wonderful team. And so on this particular day, it just didn't turn out. So it brought up a whole bunch of emotional difficulty. So it sort of showed me, you know, you can be at this for 20 years and you can develop a whole new level of confidence and a skill set, but it doesn't have to take a lot to take you back to that child-like vulnerability that we have. We all have our spots, our tender spots. And something about that interaction brought me completely back. And I literally visualized that medical student interaction that day that mother was getting upset with me.
I mean, I think, yeah, you're so eloquently describing it, and you have such powers of reflection, I think, what, like, privy, you know, to all that you've bought, you know, been through, but also all the training you've had, you're able to kind of reflect on and see the patterns in your own reactions to things to understand them, which is really, I mean, I guess probably what helps us over time figure out how to manage these situations. But I think the other thing I wanted to ask you about is just, I'm just struck in listening to you, how important, you know, it seems that having the right people there at those times made such a difference or could have made such a difference. So in the first circumstance, having that eMERGE doc, like that fellow medical student who was about to go on eMERGE doc, who really was just having that friend at that key moment come in and remind you that this wasn't all about you, that this, you know, to remind you that there's different perspectives to bring to bear on a situation, and that the way you were experiencing wasn't necessarily the truth or the right way. And then in the second circumstance, maybe not having a person, at least in that moment, that could help stand up for you. I guess how important it is to have people in our lives and to be able to maybe go to them when we're having experiences like this, when we've been really put down, criticized, abused, the power of being able to share that experience, I guess, with another individual and have them help us respond or help support us through that. I don't know if you have any reflections on that. Just strikes me with those two stories, how important the context is and the people around you, and I guess how it seems to me that would be something that sounds like it's been helpful in dealing with these kind of circumstances through your student years and your career.
Perspective taking is such a key tool, I feel, and one that you really need to proactively utilize yourself and then proactively seek out from your environment. It can be incredibly helpful for coping with difficult circumstances. Because when we get stuck with our own thoughts are influenced from our prior experiences, from our biases, sometimes from our own narrow lenses. And we know what we know, and we don't always know what we don't know. So being able to broaden that, to have someone else's perspective come in, is so key. When I'm struggling with a patient or a strategic approach to a patient or a family member, or when I'm getting frustrated or tired, I purposely press pause and I go and seek the perspective of the team member. You know, I'm getting really frustrated with this. Is there another way that I can look at this? Am I missing something? Because otherwise, we're just left with how we would react with something in the circumstance. But I think it's also important to draw out how valuable our own role is as a good colleague to somebody else. And, you know, we hear sometimes about that bystander phenomenon, but we don't always recognize the incredible impact we can have on others. And these are really pivotal times now. We hear a lot about, and we should be openly talking about racism and harassment and social inequalities and inequity. But we have to recognize that no matter what part we play in that, we all have the potential to be passive bystanders, and sometimes not even passive, to be active bystanders, which can be even more terrible. I remember as a resident being the only one in an emergency room and hearing a little bit of a kerfuffle out, and I went out to see what was going on. But before I showed my face, heard a patient who was presenting say to the nurse, "But what's the name of the doctor?" And so the nurse gave my name, and he said, "But is that a French name? I have to see a French doctor." So we were in a area of town that was more francophone at the time. And I am bilingual. I can provide clinical services in French. And the nurse said, "Oh, the doctor does speak French." And the patient says, "But that's not a French doctor. What kind of a name is that? Is that a white doctor? I want to see a white doctor." And the nurse said, "No, the doctor's not white." So then I thought, this is ridiculous. Why are we engaging in this conversation? So I sort of strutted out, and you know, I was not feeling vulnerable that day, I can tell you that much. And I went up and I said, "You know, I'm Dr. Menezes, and it sounds like there's a concern. You know, can I help you with something?" And the patient said, "Oh, you're the doctor? I don't want to see you. I want to see a white doctor." And I felt emboldened enough to say, "Look, I'm the only doctor that's working this evening. You've walked in here. Clearly, you've not been brought in by an ambulance. If you really feel that strongly about it, you absolutely can walk yourself out of this emergency room and down the street to a different hospital and make your selections. You don't get to choose who you get to see. I can work just fine here." And then I walked away. And I heard him continue to ask the nurse, "But what's the name of the doctor working tomorrow? Is that a white doctor? Does that doctor speak French?" Which I thought was ironic, because I spoke French far better than the doctor that was going to be there the next day. And the nurse actually continued to engage with that patient. And so for me, the damage wasn't even what the patient was saying. It was that the nurse actually validated that patient in continuing that conversation. So mm-hmm. I then had to have a very challenging conversation with the nurse about how important it was, or how challenging it was for me to be witness to her not, quote unquote, standing up for me, or her actually engaging the patient. So almost giving him permission to have his racist views. And you know, she struggled to even understand that perspective. So I had to very much personalize that. You know, try and picture what it's like for me to overhear that I'm being judged for my skin color or for the ethnicity of my name, as opposed to for actually the fact that I do have an ability to speak French and I actually am a very good physician. So that depersonalization can be really difficult. And I felt that she had an incredible potential role that day to educate that patient or to take a stand and to not enable that type of behavior. But that didn't happen. And so that was a really nice lesson for me of how, moving forward and throughout my career, I've tried to be mindful of how to be a good team member and a good support to the people that I work with. And we work with a tough population. Sometimes they do come in with their own biases, sometimes because of illness. Things that normally would not be socially appropriate to say do get said. I've been very, very privileged to feel that I work in an environment where we do support each other through those very difficult things, and I'm thankful.
Yes, I think you have so many great examples of some of the challenging things that you have faced, you know, throughout, from the time, you know, especially through the time through from medical school to residency into your career, that, and to be able to kind of reflect on those kind of experiences, and obviously the different ways that you reacted depending on where you were at maybe in your career, but also who was around and how, as you say, emboldened or brave or confident you felt that day to take those, that person on. I guess thinking back to sort of the earliest example that you gave in medical school, and when that person talked, you know, that initial healthcare professional talked to you in that manner, I guess if to students maybe listening to this or reflecting on difficult experiences that they might have had similarly with being criticized or verbally abused unfairly, say by a supervisor, I guess, what are your thoughts? Like, what do you wish you had known back then, or wish you somebody had said or done to help you differently back then? I guess just reflecting on one thing that was helpful, obviously, was your friend happening to come by. But what are the sort of things that you wish you had sort of been able to do in that moment, or been able to ask for later on reflection now?
I wish then I had appreciated how incredibly important it is to seek out other people's perspective, as opposed to just sitting with your own and then adding all of these emotional layers of interpretation to it. Again, from your own lens, right? So your own lens. I've grown up with very privileged experiences, but I've also grown up with quite challenging experiences. And so we tend to process and interpret what happens to us in our day-to-day through those lenses. But sometimes a different person's lens can be really, really important and really helpful, but also very constructive. It can help you to devise a plan for moving forward. And getting that in early is important, because yes, that can give you the confidence to develop a sound plan that's not going to leave you paralyzed and self-critical. But is going to help you to sort of pick yourself up by the boots and turn it into something, a learning experience. I don't know. Sometimes things are just bad and you're not going to learn anything from it. And what you have to be able to do is actually not blame yourself, but figure out how you're going to put back a few of those little pieces that got broken in that process. So I wish I had appreciated how important it was to not just sit in my misery, but to seek out perspective and to talk about it to as many people as I could, as opposed to what I did in my medical school self, was I isolated myself in shame. And I was just overwhelmed with shame, as if there was any grain of truth to anything that she had said. And there wasn't. I know that. I knew that at the time. But instead, I recriminated myself. I kind of involuted in bed under the covers and spent the whole weekend thinking, how could this have been? So perspective. And sharing and talking is really important. That's one thing I wish that I had done. And now as an educator, I also wish that I would have worked with my supervisor to advocate for me better.
Mm-hmm.
Because it wasn't right what happened. And it was his responsibility. She was his team member. Mm-hmm. It was his responsibility. He didn't have to discipline her, but it was certainly his responsibility to come back to me and say, I spoke to her and I told her.
Yeah, yes, absolutely. Just such great lessons to sort of, things to take from this is sort of the idea of sort of bringing the shame you feel out into the light and kind of sharing and having other people talk when you're feeling ashamed about something, to be able to talk about that and also to really ask for the help and the support that you need when you're not getting it. Which is a hard thing to do, but I think just such, I think you've described it so clearly how helpful those things can be when they can be done. I really have to say, I think we're out of time, but I have to say how much I appreciate you talking with us about all of these experiences you had during your years really in training, to be a doctor and a psychiatrist. And I think, there's just many, I think many, many reflections that you've shared that I think we can all learn from and take something from to help all of us as we move forward. So thank you so much, Natasha, for speaking to me today.
You're welcome, Catherine. Thank you for having me.
Thank you for listening to this Bounce podcast. We hope that you have been taken on a bit of a journey by listening to the podcast and hearing the story and perspectives shared. We would love to hear more of your reactions to and reflections on our story if you wish to share them with us at bounce@mcmaster.ca. You can also check out our website, which is linked on the podcast description, and our social media on Instagram, Facebook, and Twitter. Thank you so much.